dude! Being at the racetrack is a blast! High five!
Whoa, man, you can put your arm down now.
What, you gonna leave me hanging? Come on, bring it in for a hug.
That's okay, man. We're cool.
What's the matter? We're all buds, man.
Well, I hate to tell you, but I think you need to take a pit stop.
What? I'm not driving a race car, man.
No, pit stop. It's, well, an all-natural deodorant that'll keep your pits from, being the pits.
Oh, no. My pits are the pits?
Hey, don't worry, man. Luckily, my pals over at Bubble Genius have you covered. They've created all-natural stuff to help with summer stank. Everything from pit stop deodorant to cooling facial mist to talc-free body powders that leave you soft, not sweaty.
Hey, cool!
You said it. Bubble Genius keeps you cool all summer long.
BubbleGenius.com!
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Dear Lord Baby Jesus, we also thank you for my wife's father, Chip. We hope that you can use your Baby Jesus powers to heal him and his horrible leg. And it smells terrible, and the dogs are always bothering with it.
Mm.
Dear tiny infant Jesus.
Hey, you know, sweetie, Jesus did grow up. You don't always have to call him baby. It's a bit odd and off-putting to pray to a baby.
Well, look, I like the Christmas Jesus best, and I'm saying grace. When you say grace, you can say it to grown-up Jesus or teenage Jesus or bearded Jesus or whoever you want.
You know what I want? I want you to do this grace good so that God will let us win tomorrow.
Dear tiny Jesus, your golden fleece diapers with your tiny little fat balled-up fist pawing.
He was a man. He had a beard.
Look, I like the baby version the best. Do you hear me? I win the races and I get the money.
Ricky, finish the damn grace.
I like to picture Jesus in a tuxedo t-shirt because it says, like, I want to be formal, right, but I'm here to party, too. Because I like to party, so I like my Jesus to party.
I like to picture Jesus as a ninja fighting off evil samurai.
I like to think of Jesus, like, with giant eagle's wings and singing lead vocals for Lynyrd Skynyrd with like an angel band, and I'm in the front row and I'm hammered drunk.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Radio fills with life, a salt and pepper, a fork and knife. Radio goes with life.
My mother said, and by the way, it was wonderful for children, by the way, having your grandpop live with you, having your great aunt, your uncle, for real. Those walls were awful thin. I wonder how the hell my parents did it, but that's a different story. I know you don't know anything about that. I know none of you in your families have done the same thing. Understand that at all. I know that.
The podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality.
Joe Biden.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Hey, guess what? It's Thursday, July 12, 2012, and this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob. That's Chez. We're brought to you by BubbleGenius.com and their pit stop stinky armpits deodorant, which I actually use every day. I love it. That was Joe Biden. That was Joe Biden, I think, today, talking about hearing his parents having sex in the next room. Oh, Joe. Yeah.
You gotta love Biden. He really is crazy.
Yeah, you know, and that's one of the only things I really do like about Joe Biden is that he's crazy. And that he just
I kind of like the loose cannon thing. I can totally deal with that.
Yeah, when he calls Professor Dr. Pepper.
Right.
And then does his Apu voice. You know, he's talking about the...
God, that is one of the best things ever. That will stay in my mind for a very, very long time.
And I try to mention this whenever I can, that, you know, I'm not a huge Biden fan. I can't embrace him as I think a lot of Democrats have, because he was just that bankruptcy bill. He cast that vote in favor of that bankruptcy bill, and I mean, it's just, you want to talk about taking a giant dump on the middle class. But, you know, so we have a huge show today. We've been away for a couple of weeks. We didn't have any show last week, though we did we did do an after party on, well, we recorded it on Tuesday. We released it on Wednesday. We're going to do another after party for tomorrow. So there'll be, you know, it's like three shows this week.
Lovely.
It's almost like we're doing this full time. And then 2 weeks from now, on the 26th, there will be no show because I'll be on vacation. And then it's up in the air as to whether or not there'll be a show the following week because my trip, I'll be flying back to the East Coast. My trip is from Thursday to Thursday, which is like show day to show day. So if we do any show the first week of August, it's going to be on August 3rd, which is a Friday.
Right.
We might record something then. It all depends on how grotesquely jet-lagged I am or even how in touch with things I am. Because I don't know. I won't be blogging much either for that week.
I would hope that you would vanish and not pay any attention to any of the crap that's going on.
You know, I'd love to. I mean, that's one of those things.
Seriously, man. That's why when I went to Desert Hot Springs, I just didn't bother like reading, looking at anything.
Yeah.
I'm just detached.
And I don't think I've ever had a week where I've done that. I don't think I've ever taken a full week off where there's just been no blogging and no paying attention to politics.
Well, you can do that because you've got backup, which is pretty cool. God bless you.
Yeah, yeah.
I wish I had that.
Yeah, well, Ashby's there to fill in the gaps. And
yeah, when I took that you know, like the 4 days off to go to Desert Hot Springs and then just kind of lounge around, I didn't have anybody. It's funny. I usually at least warn my readers, you know, the people who come and visit daily that I'm not going to be around. And this time I was just like, "Bam, screw it."
Yeah, Failed. That's right. You do. You're very good at keeping people informed on your blog. You're like, you know what? I haven't been around. Sorry.
Right. Well, no. See, it's funny because I never like when I really enjoy reading somebody. I never like it when someone vanishes and then comes back and says, "Oh, I know I haven't blogged in quite a while." So generally, since I know even during downtime and or time when I'm not going to be able to have the sort of output that I'd like to have, and that's obviously been quite a bit lately because I've got so much work piled on me. I like to at least tell people, "Yeah, look, it's going to be a slow day. It's going to be this. I won't be here for the next couple of days." That kind of thing. I put up like a sort of joking auto reply out of office kind of deal, but. But no, this time I was just I think the last post I put up was on Tuesday. Tuesday afternoon, the 3rd, something about Tom and Katie, mm-hmm. And that was basically all anybody saw for you know five 6 days of me.
Well, you know, I remember when Andrew Sullivan disappeared right around I don't know it was like right before the 2008 election, and he had been pretty brutally attacking Sarah Palin and the whole pregnancy thing. You know, was Trigg really hers?
Yeah, he was. You know, he was Bristol's, one of the very few who was running with that.
Yeah, and then he just vanished, and it just turned out he decided time for a vacation. I'm going to go away. I still believe that he was suspended, but there was just no word. So it was like 5 days of view from your window, just right. Once a day, and nothing else. And so you begin to wonder if you make that a habit of your internet surfing, your usual rounds around the blogs. Then and then it's no longer there without any announcement. Then you're like, I wonder what the hell happened. Because you know, you won't be the first one to be informed if something terrible has happened. You know, you'll find out in due time, but not right away. Because
I always
you know,
wonder about that. By the way, like I need to have you know the BBC show Coupling, which I used to love, had this one episode that had kind of a great gag in it about how. You have to designate a person. If you're a guy, if you're a bachelor, you have to designate a person, a friend of yours, who, if you die in some tragic way, will come and clean all the porn out of your house before family, police, anybody else comes over.
Yeah,
and that person has a very, very important responsibility. I'm wondering if as a sort of somewhat conscientious blogger, I need to designate somebody, give them my password, and just say, yeah. By the way, if anything happens to me. You know, hey, guess what? He was killed in a freak combine accident this morning.
Yeah, you find someone you trust, someone who you would give the keys to your apartment to. And sure. You just give them some of your, like your Facebook password, your blog password. They really can't do anything with that. And then they can inform all your friends if you're dead. I think that's a good plan.
Exactly. That's great.
I would say dead or incarcerated.
Incarcerated. That's actually the much more likely one. Yeah.
But, I mean, we talk about blogging often on this show and on the After Party as if we're working in the coal mines, as if we're fishing for crab in the Bering Sea. And it's not that hard. But suffice to say, it is an around-the-clock gig. I mean, I start working, I get up at about 6, 7 o'clock in the morning, and I'm on the blogs instantly. I'm checking email, I'm on Facebook.
Yeah, I do that.
And then I don't, you know, I take a couple of breaks throughout the day, break for dinner, break for lunch. We go out and we walk the dogs. And then I'm back at it. I'm back at it that night, and I'm writing my daily banter column. You know, sometimes up until 10:30, 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, that's a full damn day. So, you know, it'll be nice, I hope, to take a little bit of time away from that.
I think that because I have spent so much time blogging and doing exactly what you described, getting up really, really early, attending to the blog all day, and then doing sort of my work around that. And, yep. And quite frankly, I didn't really have anything else. I have certainly, since getting out to L.A. over the past, you know, 7.5 months, I have taken – and because I spent years writing, you know, doing exactly what you're describing. Mm-hmm. So I think now for the first time I'm kind of taking – it's been an extended break. I mean, I blog and I put up stuff and I pay attention to what's going on, but I do not beat myself into the ground the way that I used to. And I actually – you know, I even said that one of those things that I told my readers about when I first got out here was – I'm taking some time to just enjoy myself for a change because I went through hell for a few years, and I'm just kind of like, you know what? If I get to go over and, you know, Taryn and I get to go out and have a, you know, have a good dinner or have some drinks or just hang out and watch TV or something, I'll do that over attending to what I believe are my responsibilities to the blog.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like letting people down, and certainly I'll go back and I'll always do my best to try to put good stuff in. But yeah, I mean, I don't have that I 100% live for this thing the way I used to. Mm. It is still my home. I still look at it that way.
Yeah.
But things are actually probably going to change probably pretty soon because I think I, like you, am going to begin writing daily pieces for Banter.
Yeah, yeah. That'll
be nice.
I mean, that's really the centerpiece of, in addition to the blog, that's sort of the centerpiece of my day because – I'm trying to, and I don't want to spend a whole lot more time on this. It's already 12 minutes into the show. What I'm trying to do is transition over to doing political writing, blogging, podcasting as my legitimate full-time job. And so I'm actually upping the ante here. And
besides Banter, who's paying?
Well, there's advertising. There's the After Party, which, you know, admittedly isn't a huge pile of money, but we're making gains in that direction.
Right. Oh no, I understand where you're coming from. I do the same thing. You know, my life right now is a bunch of different revenue streams. The TV production, obviously, being the best one.
Yeah.
Period. That's, you know, that makes more money than anything else.
Well, yeah.
TV money's great money.
And you know, I'm just trying to slowly transition to the point where if I feel like doing a cartoon project, I'll do it. And in fact, you know what? We're going to be releasing some original cartoons, some original political cartoons. I completely failed to mention that. I'm in the process right now of making an original political cartoon that'll be released independently with the help of Paula from Bubble Genius. And so we're going to be that's going to be out relatively soon, and it's going to be a sequel for a cartoon that I've already produced in the past that's been pretty popular on YouTube. I'm not going to spill all the beans yet, but it's suffice to say, it's like huge. This cartoon leaked onto YouTube years ago, and I mean, just one. There are multiple versions of it. Just one of it's got over 3 million views. You know, it just each one has hundreds of thousands of views. So I'm doing a sequel to that cartoon, and that'll be the first out of the batch. And just by way of a teaser, the subject matter is marijuana legalization and Ron Paul.
Oh, go, dear God.
I can't wait. It's going to be really
fun. Ron Paul and his magical jalopy.
And so, yeah, oh, my God, was that funny. Was that funny?
That was absolutely brilliant.
Go to the – if you haven't seen it yet, go to The Onion and click on the video for Ron Paul and his whimsical jalopy. It is satire comedy at its finest.
Yeah, and that's, you know, we are always talking a lot, and God knows I'm always talking about how satire really, in my opinion, is almost dead. There's just no need for it anymore because everything, especially in politics, has become so self-satirical. Yeah. It's such a self-parody. But the guys at The Onion do it just flawlessly.
Yeah. And this was a great example. I mean, it basically opposed Ron Paul as sort of this steampunk Willy Wonka, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang kind of character with, you know, magical powers and, you know, basically underscoring and highlighting how, you know, his followers will believe anything he says, even though there's no basis in reality for it.
Right. He's, what is it, people like... people like the fairy tales that Ron Paul represents or something like that.
And then he starts doing a performance with a bunch of trained singing cats. Yeah. And then all the cats hop into a giant sack. I mean, just absolutely hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. And, you know, I play it on the show, but it's really, you got to have the visuals of it because they actually, you know, comp in Ron Paul's head into this crazy, you know, Willy Wonka kind of character driving this big steam-powered jalopy. So damn funny. So damn funny. So go check it out on The Onion. We do have a lot of things to talk about this week and, you know, some catching up to do. We didn't really have a chance to cover the backlash on the healthcare reform decision from the Supreme Court. And we're going to be covering that a little bit. I think we'll dive in the next segment. You know, a discussion I've been having with Joy and with some other friends just off the air and things like that is, how long will it take before Mitt Romney leans on the Southern strategy button? And yesterday he leaned on it and then leaned on it and then leaned on it and leaned on it. I mean, I think he smashed the button. If there is, in fact, a Southern strategy button, Romney beat it to death.
Absolutely.
And so we're going to be talking about that right after the break. Let's see what else. What are you going to get? The big bucket of show this week. You know, I have some audio clips. I got a bunch of audio clips. Something about a couple of Fox audio clips that might drive you insane. One is from Fox and Friends. One is from The Five. I got a great clip of Ronald Reagan. Now, this is going to be an important one. I'm going to play this clip of Ronald Reagan talking about taxes for the rich. All right? That'll be in a little bit. Republicans voted to repeal Obamacare for the 31st time. We'll be talking about that. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll come back and really dive into the show right after this.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Yeah, we're back. That's a band called Last Dinosaur.
Heard of them, have not heard them, I guess, until now.
They're somewhere between a prog band and like Coldplay and then mixed in with some sort of, you know, kind of almost like skate punk kind of vibe.
I will not turn this into yet another lengthy conversation, but I'm completely bored by alternative music right now.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Just bored, pissless. Boy, I really am.
You know, Sirius XM's Alt Nation was making a big deal about this one band, and I can't remember the name of it. And so I was like, okay, well, let me check this out. And the band is just unlistenable. I dialed it up on YouTube, and I
let me guess, Group Love.
There you go, exactly.
Yeah.
Group Love.
Yeah, they've been pushing the crap out of Group Love, and Group Love suck. And Group Love to me is like, you know, once again, I don't want to go too far with this, but Group Love is indicative of pretty much everything Alt Nation plays. The stuff they play on Alt Nation, it is one song after another of completely indistinguishable hipster music.
Yeah, and then Group Love is just so... Group Love is like Violent Femmes, like the lead singer of Violent Femmes times 1,000. Like the worst kind of whiny, high-pitched, just unlistenable. I mean, I literally... It took me about a second and a half to click off of the YouTube video. Their latest song they performed it on. Colors. Yeah, Colors.
Yeah, and it's a terrible song. It's and they're a crappy band.
So let's get into politics here. Mitt Romney really, really dove into the Southern strategy yesterday. He was he talked to the NAACP, delivered address to the NAACP and mentioned, you know, what do you think, what kind of reaction do you think he's going to get if he tells the NAACP that he's going to repeal Obamacare?
Yeah, his speech was not given to the NAACP. Yeah. It was in no way intended to impact the NAACP.
Right.
It's interesting. In some ways, I give him a little bit of credit because I remember that one of the things that bothered me most about George W. Bush's reelection campaign, you know, I was working at CNN at the time, and everything that he said, you remember, they were catchphrases. They were, you know, they're the little catchphrases that he dropped into every one of his speeches. And since CNN and, you know, networks of the election ramps up have to cover every one of those, after a while, it was like listening to, you know, going to see the Stones live. You just wait for satisfaction. You know, it's like his greatest hits.
Yeah.
And it was almost as if George W. Bush didn't realize that you have to speak beyond just the audience sitting in front of you because it's going to be broadcast everywhere. Mitt Romney, at least I think, there's a part of me that, as devious as it is, I almost kind of give him credit for like sitting there and saying, you know what, or having his handler saying, this isn't even for you. Mm-hmm. We're not even going to worry about this audience. We're looking at the big picture.
Well, yeah,
but the big picture is horrendous.
He got booed for this with the audience itself, you know, regardless as to whether or not it was aimed at them directly. But, I mean, you know, you say, I'm going to repeal Obamacare, and it's going to be met as with some unpopular reaction. I mean, it's going to, you know, because I think in any audience, it doesn't even matter if it's the NAACP, as long as it's not a bunch of Mitt Romney sycophants, you're going to get a mixed response on that line, because most people... Right now, I mean, America in general is split evenly. I mean, exactly evenly on Obamacare. You start outlining the different items, the different parts of the bill, and people like almost everything. Independents, Republicans, Democrats, they like almost all of it. The only thing that's kind of a toss-up is the mandate with Republicans. Everyone else just digs this legislation. So it's going to be met with some boos if you say, I'm going to repeal this.
Right.
Yeah,
it's only the rabid, you know, mouth-breathing, screaming from the rooftops Republicans who really want to say who all they want is a repeal.
That's right.
That's their big mantra. That's their article of faith.
That wasn't really the noteworthy part of this whole saga. Now, I want to rewind and talk a little bit about some things that Mitt Romney pops off and says occasionally. We've talked about them on the show. His I love trees and I love lamp kind of, you know, amber waves of grain jokes and things like that, that just fall flat, that he kind of jerks. He kind of gets jittery and herky jerky and ends up blurting out these ridiculous things. Well, and the most recent one that was hilarious to me was he's at some event. Someone hands him a glass of lemonade and he samples the lemonade, drinks it down, and then says, and this is how he describes it. Mitt Romney describes the lemonade as lemon, period, wet, period, good, period. So, lemon, wet, good. The best adjectives he could come up with.
That's because it went into his taste generator and immediately was converted to the English definition, you know, the adjectives.
Yes.
It's the Romneybot 5000.
It's like the chemical composition of lemonade. You got lemon in there. It's wet because there's liquid, and it's good because I'm supposed to react that everything that is tasty is good. That's how I'm programmed. Beep, yep. Boop, beep, boop, beep, boop. Actually, you know, I prefer the CG Uncanny Valley version, the description of Mitt Romney over the robot Mitt Romney.
No, it is the Uncanny Valley. It is something that I know we've talked about and I've written about quite often, is that I can't put into proper words how he makes me feel, how weird he is. And he is weird. I don't give a crap what anybody says. You want to say that it's denigrating him to say that? Just screw you. He's weird.
So, you know, so he could say in some of these instances, you know, I'm busy, you know, I'm sleep deprived, I'm on the campaign trail. You know what? Not everything comes out smoothly, but he doesn't. He just like whizzes right on by. Lemonade is lemon, wet, good. Yesterday, in reaction to the booing over the repeal Obamacare remark, he could have said, well, you know what? I can understand these people want Obamacare to remain in effect. I want to repeal it. Of course, it's not going to be popular. I respect their views and... onward we go with the campaign. Instead, Mitt Romney says, remind them of this. If they want more free stuff from the government, tell them to go vote for the other guy. More free stuff. But don't forget, nothing is really free. Translation, welfare queens.
Now, wait.
Yes.
I actually will correct you on this just a little bit. Okay. Because I read that quote, too. And my immediate thought, and by the way, I'm correcting, and I'm going to tell you that what he said was obviously done purposely. He said that to the NAACP to be able to use that line, that particular thing that he said later, very, very quickly later. He knew he'd get booed. It was a complete political calculation. Mm-hmm. But that's not the full quote. Just before he says, you tell them, which sounds admittedly horrendous because it sounds like he's saying them, meaning the people back at, the people who were at the NAACP meeting.
Yeah.
He says, if you know any people who are pro-Obamacare, you tell them. So it mitigates it a little bit. In other words, I still think that what he said was bad, and I still think, again, it was a political calculation. And he's absolutely, and maybe, God knows, maybe he knew that the quote, maybe his people are so smart that they know that the sort of salient quote would be cut down and it would turn into, you tell them, and he can use that as an applause line with the red meat crowd and use it to fundraise and all that crap. But either way, I don't think he was referring specifically to them, meaning welfare queens he could have been referring to welfare queens in general, but I don't think that he was referring specifically to the NAACP audience.
Okay. Was it in that context, though?
What do you mean?
What was it in the context of discussing the booing reaction?
Absolutely. Yes, he was. Absolutely. And he was talking about that. He said, they booed me. I wish I had the exact quote in front of me. I should have pulled it up. But, they booed me and blah, blah, blah. Well, all I can say is that if you have friends who he was talking – it was a pool reporter who got the quote. He said, all I can tell you is that if you have friends who are pro-Obamacare, you tell them that, and then continue quote that.
Okay. Well, we got a break, and we'll get more into it after a quick word from Bubble Genius. Back after this. Oh, hey. Show's brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius, all vegan products that smell absolutely delicious, and their soaps and their bath and body products are easily the best I've ever tried, including what you're about to hear. I mean, not only do they make soap, but it's like they've also got deodorant to keep you from stinking during the spontaneous combustion of the North American continent. It's always important. Here's the latest word from Bubble Genius.
Hey, dude! Being at the racetrack is a blast! High five!
Whoa, man, you can put your arm down now.
What, you gonna leave me hanging? Come on, bring it in for a hug.
That's okay, man. We're cool.
What's the matter? We're all buds, man.
I hate to tell you, but I think you need to take a pit stop.
What? I'm not driving a race car, man.
No, pit stop. It's, an all-natural deodorant that'll keep your pits from, being the pits.
Oh, no. My pits are the pits?
Hey, don't worry, man. Luckily, my pals over at Bubble Genius have you covered. They've created all-natural stuff to help with summer stank. Everything from pit stop deodorant to cooling facial mist to talc-free body powders that leave you soft, not sweaty.
Hey, cool!
You said it. Bubble Genius keeps you cool all summer long.
BubbleGenius.com!
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Your promo code is Bob and Chez, BobandChez, for 15% off your entire order. You get that exclusively because you listen to this show. Thank you for it. Okay, so you said there was a slightly different...
Here's the quote. During the commercial, I pulled it up.
Okay.
you know, he says, by the way, I had the privilege of speaking today at the NAACP convention in Houston. I gave them the same speech I'm giving you. I don't give different speeches to different audiences, all right? I gave them the same speech. When I mentioned I'm going to get rid of Obamacare, they weren't happy. I didn't get the same response. That's okay. I want people to know that what I stand – I want people to know what I stand for, and if I don't stand for what they want, go vote for someone else. That's just fine. But I hope people understand this. Your friends who like Obamacare, you remind them of this. If they want more stuff from government, tell them to go vote for the other guy, more free stuff. But don't forget, nothing is really free. So that's, you know, it's still, as I said, it's still kind of a crappy thing to say. And he's definitely still playing up the, in a minor way, the sort of Southern strategy, because he's obviously saying that, you know, look, if you want free stuff, which immediately we all know where the far right goes when it comes to hearing the words free stuff. They want free stuff from the government. Incidentally, I don't know if you – total sidebar here, but I don't know if you caught – I think it was today's Fox – is it Fox News or Fox Nation? It was Fox News piece on how America's coming civil war is the makers versus the takers. But either way, that's what I'm saying. That's the way they think, the makers versus the takers.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is – Romney was not alluding to the people specifically at the NAACP meeting.
All right. So it isn't – he's not
so
necessarily –
it's always important that we're fair.
Yeah. Well, that's true. And it's not – you know, I said at the top of the show that he kind of leaned on the Southern strategy, but he didn't lean on the button. Now with the additional context, you're right. You're right. I think it's more of a general reaction to people who support the Affordable Care Act.
Exactly.
But, you know, when I guess that news came out, that quote was released, and I saw it on Matto blog last night, and then it was also on Crooks and Liars. And when I first saw that, I was like, well, geez, this is...
Oh, it was infuriating. But that's one of the reasons why I think that we need to be much more vigilant about keeping context in mind and things like that, because I'm never, you know, everyone, I think, should do it. But certainly I think that those who combat misinformation that comes from certainly all the misinformation coming from sort of the far right, and which of course we all know the far right really is kind of the right these days since the Tea Party has grabbed the Republicans by the balls. But yeah, it's important that we kind of keep things in perspective and not allow ourselves to do the same kind of crap that, you know, that quite frankly the other side of the aisle is doing.
That's right. And I'm not entirely backpedaling on the Southern strategy. I mean, what we're talking about here is whenever that's brought up, whenever the free stuff meme is brought up, whenever the you know, you vote only because you want to get some sort of handout from the government, that's generally used as, you know, in that welfare queen kind of context. You know what? There might have been, now that I'm thinking about it, there might have been another sort of step into the Southern strategy mode for Mitt Romney.
Which one?
This is sort of similarly debatable as the quote from yesterday. Remember the Obama isn't working banner?
Yeah.
That could arguably be Southern strategy.
It could arguably. I mean, the thing with the Southern strategy, and I know another one of those things that we've talked about, and I've made it abundantly clear – I'm very, very, very reticent to call anybody a racist unless I know for sure or very close. I mean, I do need to be convinced, because slapping the title of racism on somebody or racist is something that's almost impossible to defend against. And it becomes even more sort of devilish when you start making the claim that, well, someone's racist and they don't even know it. And it's just, how do you defend against that? So because of that, it's like, you know, people will always say, when I bring up the fact that some of these people who slag on Obama from the right, the Tea Party people especially, are racist, you know, I get a lot of pushback. And I'm like, look, you don't need to – first of all, it took me a very – I always try to tell people, it took me a very long time to come to that sort of place. To get to the place where I was willing to finally say, you know what, I've been trying to deny it and come up with other reasons for it, and there just aren't any anymore.
Yeah.
It is absolutely racist what they're doing, and there is racist intent and racist motivation behind it. Everybody? No, of course not. If you criticize Obama, does that make you, you know, and you're on the right, does that make you a racist? No, it absolutely does not. Of course not.
But I mean, this is an admitted strategy. by the Republicans. I mean, this isn't something that's any
no,
sort
absolutely.
Of subjective.
No, I agree.
I mean, it's entire. I mean, Michael Steele actually said, you know, we've done this. I'm sorry for it. You know,
right. The interesting thing is that the Southern strategy preys on people like me. It preys on people who don't want to admit that there's racism going on unless, quite honestly, that, you know, I have no choice but to say it, unless they actually hear the word nigger, unless they actually hear somebody say, you know, that guy's a nigger, because that's immediately, you can immediately call that racist.
Yeah.
So what they do is they find ways around it. They find little ways to sort of step around that so that it leaves just enough wiggle room so that people can say, maybe it's racist.
Yeah. Well, then instead you say welfare queens, or you say, you know, so-and-so wants handouts, or, you know, you insinuate and imply, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, he pals around with terrorists and, you know, things that kind of can be people who are apt to believe these things, to actually have those racial, the guys with the Curious George dolls and the Sarah Palin rally lines, you know, those guys are going to hear something. And actually African Americans are going to hear it too. And, you know, so it's not always easy to pick up, but if you're looking out for it, you see it all over the place with the
right.
Republican
and
Party.
I've
they
never
do it
been
all
a
the
big
time.
Fan of that kind of insanity.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back right after this.
This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Inimitable voice of Mark Lanegan.
Yeah.
Mark Lanegan and his heroin addiction.
Yeah, I really think that this song is kind of the song I always... If I'm looking for something from the early 90s in that era, I don't know why this song is the first song that pops into my head.
Dude, you gotta if you like Lanegan, you gotta hear the stuff he did with Greg Dooley from the Afghan Whigs. Holy hell, is that great!
Oh yeah. So the aftermath of the Supreme Court ruling on the healthcare reform law was something that we didn't get a chance to cover because we were off last week. But there were several aspects of it that were kind of disturbing to observe. The first one was the sort of the predictably knee-jerk reaction from the right that the Supreme Court upheld the largest tax increase in the history of the world. I mean, that's what they were saying. I mean, Obamacare is the biggest tax increase ever in the history of America. And one guy said that it was the biggest tax increase, literally, he said, in the universe.
Course.
I'm not sure exactly how that works, how
that
you can
was,
actually
that was,
know that. That
was representative hyperbole of whatever freaking backwater Berg.
Yeah. It was James Pinkerton, Fox News commentator.
Lovely.
Said it was the biggest tax hike in the universe.
Yeah, of course.
I'm not sure how he knows that, especially given Emperor Palpatine's outrageous Death Star tax hike of 1958. But, I mean, that's it. You know... It was. It's clearly not the biggest tax increase in the history of anything. In fact, it's the, you know, the biggest tax increase of the last 30 years was passed by Ronald Reagan in 1982.
Saint Ron.
Yep.
It won't bring that crap up though.
According to the CBO, the Tax Equity and Fiscal Responsibility Act of 1982 was the biggest tax hike in the last 30 years. The mandate under the Affordable Care Act is a distant fourth behind tax increases from Reagan, George H.W. Bush, and Bill Clinton. If we go back further in time, back to 1950, the ACA is the 10th largest tax increase in recent American history. The 9th, 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, and 15th are all Bush 41, Reagan, and Nixon tax increases. Man, those guys would be screwed in the 2012 Republican Party. I think those guys would be lining up with those the conservatives. I think they'd end up having to either pander to that base and ignore. I'm speaking as if Bush 41, who's still alive, and then Reagan and Nixon as zombies were actually in Congress today or in a position of power, because they would completely, they would have to pander or they would have to backpedal on their own positions.
I mean, oh, yeah. No, I mean, you're not breaking any new ground to say that Ronald Reagan couldn't survive in this climate.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be Ronald Reagan.
Yeah. And there's so many examples of that. And it just gets greeted with, you know, I'm not listening. Like, la, 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 la. You can't tell me that. That's not true. Or there'll be some other thing about, well, you know, there were 8 years of peace and prosperity. Or, we, you know, there's a big economic boom because he also cut taxes. Yeah, he cut taxes until he discovered that it was fiscally irresponsible to do so. Then he started raising taxes. So that's a fact.
You know, it's fascinating because who's a real welfare queen? You know, some guy who's taken a little bit of assistance so that, you know, he or she can buy food or whatever, or somebody who wants to pay literally no taxes and yet still have all of the goods and services and all the really wonderful things that come with living in the United States of America.
Well, that's, I mean,
you know, I want freeways, I want all of that, but I don't want to pay for it.
I mean, that ties into what we were discussing in the previous segment about Mitt Romney. I mean, talk about people who want free stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Like a guy who moves all his money offshore.
In 2006, there was a study done comparing what the government spends on traditional social welfare programs and what the government spends on corporate welfare, subsidies and the like, grants and other things to private corporations, many of which are earning and continue to earn record profits. $59 billion that year was spent on traditional social welfare programs. $59 billion. $92 billion spent on corporate subsidies.
Yeah.
So the government spent 50% more on corporate welfare than it did on food stamps and housing assistance in 2006.
Exactly. That's like the thing that we were talking about on the after party, you know, the bonus after party we did this week, and the piece that I wrote about John Stossel.
Yeah.
You know, John Stossel does this entire piece on that he calls Freeloaders for Fox Business. Mm-hmm. And on it, he dresses up like a homeless guy and begs for change. Ugh. The bizarre circular reasoning being you shouldn't give money to homeless people because they might be douchey Fox Business reporters out to trick you. But the bottom line is, as he's teasing this to those dribbling idiots on Fox and Friends, he says the wealthy in this country are responsible for more when it comes to taking, when it comes to freeloading, as he put it, than the poor. And yet, right after saying that, you know what he mentioned, exactly, corporate welfare and subsidies and all that, as soon as he, like the second he finished saying that, it was almost as if he just said, oh, you know, screw it, we're not going to talk about that. Let's pick on the people at the bottom of the food chain.
Yeah.
And that's what he did. He spent the next like 5 minutes like beating up on somebody who's asking for loose change.
That's right.
Because that's a taker. That's a parasite.
And, you know, we...
getting millions in... cratering the global economy and then getting billions and billions of taxpayer money to bail you out because you just can't fail. That's not a freeloader.
That's right. You know, there's also... this is probably a good time to bring this in, but there's this quote that I have from Ronald Reagan about tax loopholes. Let's listen to this. This is Ronald Reagan... Not Ronald Reagan in the early 70s or Ronald Reagan, you know, because he used to be a Democrat, too, like 100 years ago. This is Ronald Reagan in the middle of his two terms as president. This is from 1985.
We're going to close the unproductive tax loopholes that have allowed some of the truly wealthy to avoid paying their fair share. In theory, some of those loopholes were understandable, but in practice, they sometimes made it possible for millionaires to pay nothing. But a bus driver was paying 10% of his salary, and that's crazy. Do you think the millionaire ought to pay more in taxes than the bus driver, or less?
That's right. I mean, of course, that makes perfect sense. That's logic. That's basic.
Ronald Reagan would be a liberal right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, with the exception of the union busting and certainly his, you know, his stand on... his stand on sort of, some would say very good stand on communism, you know, very defense friendly president. But yeah, besides those two things, you know, and a couple of other little odds and ends, I mean, those kind of things, those comments he's making right there, that makes him progressive.
Yeah.
By today's standards.
Meanwhile, you want to talk about fiscal policy and things like food stamps and versus tax cuts and tax loopholes and things like that and how it affects the economy. You know, I go back to this occasionally. This is a great chart from Moody's Analytics. It was originally published in USA Today, of all places. But Moody's calculated what kind of return on investment you get for every dollar of government money spent on these different programs. So you say, you know, we spend a dollar on dividend and capital gains tax cuts. You spend a dollar on those, you only get 37 cents worth of economic growth as a consequence of spending that dollar. It's a terrible investment. You end up losing whatever it is, 83 cents. No, it would be 63 cents on the dollar. You make the Bush tax cuts permanent, that you only get a 32-cent return on investment for every dollar spent. Extend the alternative minimum tax, only 51 cents for every dollar invested. Cutting the corporate tax rate, only 32 cents return on investment. But you increase food stamps, you get $1.74 in economic growth for every dollar spent. That's a good investment in the economy. Extending unemployment benefits, $1.61. You get that as a return on investment. Increased infrastructure spending, $1.57. LIHEAP spending, $1.13. You know, these are things that actually work. These are things that actually stimulate the economy. And yet, you know, the Republicans just voted to cut food stamps. Well, a couple of months ago, they voted to, they actually blocked a reduction, $20 billion reduction in oil subsidies to starving corporations like BP, ExxonMobil, and Chevron.
You're creating a plutocracy. That's all this is.
Top five biggest welfare queens in big oil earned over $1 trillion in profits during 2011. And yet they need your government dollars.
Amazing how that works.
Who's asking for the handouts here?
Exactly.
And who do you think they're contributing to? But suffice to say, you know, the Affordable Care Act is not the biggest tax increase.
Yeah, but you can't.
Look, ultimately, I saw one of those infographics on Facebook, and it was a great little point that someone made in the form of a graphic, you know, one of those things where there's a picture and then there's a slogan over top of it. It says, John Roberts, a Republican Chief Justice, appointed by a Republican president, decided in favor of a Republican policy. So naturally, Republicans are angry about this. You want a definition of the modern conservative movement, the modern Republican Party. That's it right there. Chief Justice John Roberts, Republican, appointed by George W. Bush, you know, wrote an opinion in favor of something that Republicans invented. And so what do they do? What do Republicans do when that thing is upheld? They want to engage in armed rebellion over it. Something that their own people created. It boggles the mind. It confounds reason. The Republicans yesterday voted for the 31st time to repeal Obamacare. That's the 31st time since it was passed, whatever it was, in early 2010. So they have spent, according to CBS's Nancy Cordes, Republicans' many fruitless attempts at repealing Affordable Care Act taken up at least 80 hours of time on the House floor since 2010, amounting to two full work weeks. As the House, according to the Congressional Research Service, cost taxpayers $24 million a week to operate, those 2 weeks amounted to a total cost of approximately $48 million to do something that had no chance of passing whatsoever outside of the House. So they're doing these symbolic repeals of Obamacare. How much money have they spent, by the way, in creating jobs? Zero. Zero. They haven't done anything. $48 million to repeal Obamacare, even though if it gets to the Senate would destroy it. It would never pass the Senate. And if it got past the Senate, by some miracle, Do you think President Obama is ever going to sign that in a million years?
Right.
Talk about a waste of money, a waste of time, wasteful spending. It's wasteful spending. Just like those oil subsidies. Fox and Friends, I've got some audio here. Fox and Friends this week accused the president of engaging in simplistic language to cater to low information voters. It was kind of hilarious. You want to hear this clip?
Sure.
Here's Fox and Friends.
You're president of the United States. You can say whatever you want. And then, yeah, fact checkers come in. But it's like reading the fine print after people make mistakes. If you, people don't pay attention to the fine print. It's all about messaging. President Obama is an amazing campaigner. Republicans, if they want a shot at this, they need to get into the game and become more progressive with the messaging.
But don't you also agree, Gretch, you could be looking out of touch if you go tell a bunch of people who are experiencing 8.2% unemployment, wow, good news, we have 80,000 jobs in and 3 months ago was 250,000, and you need 250,000 to break even, and we're supposed to have recovery summer two years ago.
But speaking of paying attention, as Steve was talking about, which is totally true, people are not necessarily paying close attention, but they never pay close attention. That's the thing. That's why President Obama has been great at doing this simplistic messaging for people who are not looking at every detail.
Well, those people,
I'm sorry, what were you saying?
Those people are what they refer to as low information voters, people who just get some
irony.
Stuff in and they think, form of an opinion.
That's it. I mean,
wait,
you know what?
Make it stop.
Yeah,
make it stop.
Yeah, but you know what? You know what this is?
Well,
you know
that was Ducey, right?
Yeah, that was Ducey
that
at the end.
Ducey, I mean, the clown. Yeah, yeah. Steve Ducey telling me, you know, lecturing me on low information voters. That's f-ing rich.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, again, it's another example of I think Karl Rove's influence on the political discourse, where what he's been doing and what the Republicans have been doing for the last several years is taking everything that the Democrats are saying, that liberals are saying, that progressives are saying, and turning it around and saying it about Democrats and liberals and progressives.
Yeah, it's I know you are, but what am I?
That's exactly right. So
not me. It's not me, it's you. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, Mitt Romney's got this record of unprecedented cynicism and lying in the form of a political campaign where he's just telling people anything that pops into his head.
That's why I'm voting for Ron Paul and his magical jalopy.
And his whimsical jalopy. His bag full of singing cats. So damn funny. But I mean, everything, it is funny. I was listening to that clip. A lot of the things that they were saying about President Obama, we've said about Mitt Romney, or other progressives have written about Mitt Romney. And it's just like they just took that script, changed the proper names, and regurgitated. You go back and look at Karl Rove's quotes from the last 3 years. Everything that was said about George W. Bush by way of criticism, he turned it around and said it about, and has said it over the last 3 years about President Obama. It's just like it's like childish, petty, you know, grade school recess. You know, I know you are, but what am I, politics?
Absolutely.
Like pathetic, like vengeful payback. Boy, they said it about us for 8 years, so we're gonna get them. How do you think they'll like it when we say that he's abusing executive power, even though George W. Bush did it worse than any modern president? Unbelievable. Well, hey, there's a brand new after party coming up tomorrow. Well, lots of stuff to talk about on that. Plus our most hated list is going to be a sort of centerpiece. Our most hated 80s rock bands and musicians. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. See you tomorrow.
See ya.